So one person will build a pair of speakers. So it won't be a case of one person will put drive units in and then it will be passed to somebody else for packing or it'll be passed on to somebody else for measuring. One person builds that pair of speakers from scratch right through until they pack them in the box.
DeVore Fidelity, the show partner of Not an Audiophile, the podcast. DeVore Fidelity has become one of the most acclaimed high-end companies in the world. And having heard the loudspeakers many times, I know why. They're all still handcrafted in Brooklyn, New York. We love how this iconic brand captures the excitement and breath of the sound. Nothing brings you closer to the music than DeVore Fidelity. For a retailer near you, visit DeVoreFidelity.com. And we are back, Not an Audiophile, the podcast, episode 48, season 3. And today we speak to Zoe from Proac, a wonderful loudspeaker maker based in the UK that has been building loudspeakers in the UK since the 70s. I guess they're around 50 years old, as seemingly every UK hi-fi company is. What a time to be alive in the early 70s when all of these amazing businesses started. Equally amazingly, so many of them still going, and that's because they make wonderful products. So Zoe fills us in on not just the history, which is all very interesting. Of course, her father started the company and had a particularly talented ear for a well-executed crossover design, and built a reputation on that cohesive and rather lovely sound. And in fact, if there's one thing I'd say about Proac is read about it as much as you want, but you need to go and listen to a pair, probably new or used. I mean, they're all excellent. They've been amazing for many years, but having recently heard the new ones, I have to say they are delightful, and I think I mentioned that in the interview. The thing that's not covered in the interview is Zoe skirts around the issue of a new model. I think she mentions it from memory that it's being released at Bristol, which of course just finished over the weekend, the Bristol Hi-Fi Show in Bristol, UK, and one of the biggest shows in Europe, and particularly for UK manufacturers, and lots of new products released at Bristol this year, one of them being a new Proac. DB1R. So R is for ribbon. So there's also a dome tweeter version of a DB1, and this is something that I wasn't sure that Proac were going to continue with. They have a number of models where they offer both tweeter options, and of course that of course involves twice as much work for them. You know, you have to develop a optimized crossover for the different tweeter, and it kind of outwardly makes life seem more complicated for them, but for the client it's amazing, because you can listen to the wonderful mid-range, and then it can be accented in the treble by either a ribbon or a dome tweeter depending on your preference. So once again, comes back to go and have a listen. But yeah, little did I realize when I mentioned this subject to Zoe in the interview that you're about to hear, that whether she was continuing with the dual tweeter idea. Little did I realize that, in fact, she was doubling down on the idea. So we cover all sorts of aspects in the interview of the history and what's happening now, but I will mention it only one more time before we go straight to the interview, which is Proac is mainly special. Because, yes, they're still made in the UK, and the handcrafted and the quality control is exceptionally high, as you are about to hear, but they sound stunning. Just go and find yourself a demonstration, which is difficult to do. They are a smaller business. They're not in every fish and chip shop. But thank you for listening. Like and subscribe, as they say. If you're enjoying the podcast, please help us get wonderful guests like Zoe on a regular basis. And now let's listen to the Proac story from Zoe. March Audio. March Audio is a proud episode sponsor of the Not an Audiophile podcast. With a mission to provide superb technical performance and exceptional sound at modest prices, Alan March has designed a range of power amplifiers, a preamplifier, and a selection of stunning loudspeakers that you should check out now at marchaudio.com. We've got Zoe Tyler-Mardell on the phone from PROAC in the UK, near Oxford, really? Is that the closest, big town, do you think?
Hello, Andrew. Yes, I suppose we're quite central, so we're sort of halfway between Northampton and Oxford.
Yeah, okay.
So easily accessed from London about an hour, and then Birmingham's probably about another hour the other way. So we're quite central, which is quite
absolutely
good.
And you've been in that factory for a long time, I think, haven't you? Since the 90s or something?
Yeah, so my father purchased the first factory around about 1990.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a while we run the two operations, the one in Boreham Wood, which was the original place we started manufacturing from, and we were running the factory at the same time. And gradually he moved out of Boreham Wood, and we were probably fully in Brackley by around about 1996, I would say.
Okay, so so you've been there for many years, 30 years, which, yep. I guess those years have just, just
flown,
yes, as they do. I don't know. Everyone's heard of PROAC. People who listen to this podcast are lovers of great equipment, and therefore they will know the brand. I suppose, is it weird being part of a legend almost, in the sense of, and it's a very family business, which I don't have any secret information. The information is on your website. I've leafed through it, and
yep.
Really it's kind of three generations of your family have been involved. It is
actually more four generations.
Well, I was going to say, because of your children are involved as well now, or?
Not so much my daughter, my son is. It started with my father, obviously, and his parents.
Yes.
Back in the early 70s, and it evolved over the years. I was at school, and my boyfriend at school was looking for a job. Wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do going forward.
Yes.
And my dad was looking for someone younger to come and join them. And I got him a job with my dad, as you do. And
leveraging some power. Yes, yes. And he's never. So was that John we're talking about?
That's John, yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's worked with my dad since probably 1989.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. So he worked with my dad for many, many years, seen many, many models developed, designed, put into production.
Well, there's the answer of how you've continued the magic, because he's been ensconced for so long. And I guess, when I say magic, I want to make it quite clear why I wanted to speak to you, because I've never had a particularly, as someone who's been in wholesaling and retailing and what have you for my whole life, I actually have had very little to do with PROAC except probably trading it in. On very few occasions, or repairing it on very few occasions. But whenever you hear it, or you hear it, a couple of times I've heard your newer models at shows that I've met you at, or heard demonstrations, and most specifically Munich, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
As far as shows, we'll get to. And it's always a delight. I know it sounds like I'm blowing a little bit of wind up the but the point is they do have a particular way about them, which is obviously something your father kind of passionate, and must have spent an enormous amount of time initially obsessed to squeeze out the magic juices, because it just they are both an exciting loudspeaker to listen to and also, of course, kind of the sound washes over you, and they're very relaxing, and it's a very hard combination to get right. Anyone who's attempted to design a loudspeaker, a DIY builder, or someone who's a bit of a manufacturer like myself is always looking for that sweet balance. And your father clearly had that nutted out. There's very few models that I've never heard a model that's not a lovely listen. I guess there's some that he or you or John are were happier with, I guess. And there's the models that customers have probably bought more of. But they all seem to have this lovely way about them. So we'll get that out of the way. That's why we're talking to you.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of other things about PROAC which people probably don't immediately realise. The depth of the family, the fact that it's a family business, you've not been, well, to my knowledge at least, feel free to correct me, you've not been taken over by some Chinese consortium or something.
Absolutely not.
I mean, it's a family business. And then, of course, where do you make the product? You make it in your own factory to a large degree. And that's become quite unfashionable, hasn't it, really?
It has. And I think the product that we make is obviously a very traditional looking product.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of speakers out there that are very high tech and, different shapes, designs, even colours and finishes. We've always been quite traditional in what we produce. And I think going back to the sound aspect of it, my father was very into live music. So he loved classical music, he loved concerts, any of that sort of listening to music. So initially, I think what he set out was to produce a speaker that was as near to being at a concert and having the realisticness of the sound.
Yep.
That's what his main aim was and always was, really.
Yes.
So I think that's where he concentrated the development side of it. And he was just naturally very good at crossover design and knowing where to integrate the different frequencies to achieve that result. So I think that's what made him so successful in what he did. And the fact that he was dedicated and he was a bit of a workaholic and passionate about what he did. And I think that's the kind of legacy we've been left with. And going back to what you were saying, it is very big shoes to fill. But we feel, because we did work with him for so long, we know his ethos in design and we know what he looks for and how we design products. We've just carried on in what he would have done. So lots of listening, not just about technical readings and measurements, but lots and lots of listening to lots of different types of music and giving it time to develop. If we're doing a new speaker, we'll listen to it, we'll make some adjustments, we'll do something, we'll change something, and then we might leave it for a couple of months leave it, let it sit there, and we'll go back to it. And it might sound completely different when we go back to it, and we'll then decide, right, okay, this needs altering or that needs changing to get where we want to get to. So I think because we've carried on trying to do that in the same respect that he would.
Yes.
And we always joke that John's good with the technical side of it, whereas I've kind of got my dad's ears a little bit, so I can hear.
Right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not really technical on that side of it, but I, listening-wise and knowing the sort of sound we're trying to achieve, I think I'm quite similar in how I listen to the music, how my dad used to listen to it. So John and I very much do it. Although he's the technical side of it, we're very much doing it as a team together. So,
yeah, okay. Well, yeah. I did, thank you for answering or illuminating me and our audience, of course, in
that's
that
all right.
regard. Well, because the thing is, a couple of, whenever you were at Munich last and you had a little cabin on the hall, in the main
that's
halls,
right, yeah.
like 2 years ago or something, I think. I'm not sure whether it was two
it was
or three.
Or three one. Years ago.
3 years
I
ago,
think.
Okay. Well, yeah. I was sitting in there listening to what I believe.
The K1s.
Well, I was going to say, I think it was K1s, yes.
Yeah.
Is that the only loudspeaker you had on demo, or because I'm pretty?
That's the only speaker we had in the cabin on demonstration.
Yes,
our associate customer in Germany has had other products on demo in other years.
Yes,
elsewhere.
Okay. Well, that was, and John was in there demoing them, and I sort of wandered in like, oh, geez, I wonder how this is, I don't know how new the K1 is, and excuse my ignorance in that regard, but it doesn't really matter because I sat down and I was in a rush. I mean, there was things I needed to do, right? There's a lot to see at the show and there was a lot of people to speak to. And I don't know, I have rarely sat in a room and just, and you know, said at the end of the track, like, hey, listen to the end of the track is something not everyone does. And then you're like, what else have you got there? You know, like, and you were playing CDs, which is kind of, you know, had become somewhat out of fashion, which is
<Yep. laughs>
a little bit how Proac seems to be in a way. And so, and that the sound was just, you know, I don't want to turn this into an ad for Proac, but it was so lovely. And so I think I listened to four tunes, and I started to feel guilty about taking up his time, so I left. But I could have, it just is that kind of sound. And that, I guess, is
yep.
the point I want to make. And so I won't rabbit on about it too much more. But I was wondering how you would consistently carry on that beautiful balance, and now we know why, because you've just, well, John's been drowning in it for, you know, since, would you say, the late 80s, I think. I mean, he must, I mean, you know, and of course you've got the genetic connection as far as the listening, so you basically as a team are set. So if you ever bust up, like, you know, you've had enough. I mean, you've been together, obviously, what is it now, 30, how long, what, since school, did you say?
Yeah, so we've been together since we were at school, which was the late 80s, and then we've been married since 92, so a long time.
That's a solid effort. Yeah, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, it's an impressive performance, and, of course, it works out because you're a great business team. So, I mean, you've been darting around the world in more recent times, if we fast forward to today. And so it seems like Proac is you know, you've gathered up the business and you're exposing it to a new audience. Is that what's happening at the moment?
I think we're in a bit of a transition period mm-hmm. with regards to hi-fi. You know, a lot of the traditional audiophiles are becoming of an older age, without mm-hmm. sounding disrespectful, and it's obviously getting that younger audience interested in what you do. And yes. and as I said before, we're not cutting edge in our design and finish. We try and be modern with our finishes, but we're a traditional loudspeaker manufacturer. So mm-hmm. we hope that our strengths reach the audience in the fact that what we do, as you say, listening to our speakers, we find they're non-fatiguing. You can listen absolutely. To them for quite a long time. Yes. And they're quite versatile. You know, whatever music or genre of music you're interested in, they'll cover any of those aspects very well. Mm-hmm. So it is trying to reach a younger audience. But we've found as well with the shows, particularly Bristol, which is coming up next month,
yes.
the audience that's coming around, the actual generation, there is a lot of younger generation starting to come around and look at the shows. And I think maybe if they've had parents that have been interested in music and have had hi-fi at home, it passes down. And we quite often have people contact us that have been left hi-fi. Unfortunately,
yeah, okay.
a member of the family's passed away and they've been inherited speakers. So sometimes it comes around that way, that it's passed down generational as well, that their parents have been interested. And again, with music tastes, lots of people come around and we play quite traditional music at the shows because that shows the speakers well. And you'd think yes. that the younger audience wouldn't be quite so interested in that, you know, bands and artists that were around in the late 70s, early 80s. But I think, again, because that generational music's been passed down, they're like, oh, yeah, I do know this music, even though it's way before my time.
We all know a great hi-fi system is more than the sum of the parts. Compatibility is really hard to find, but it is possible, and a well-curated, well-crafted system is pure pleasure. Let Haynow Hi-Fi use their experience to help you experience that pure pleasure. HeyNowHiFi.com.au.
Way before my time.
Yeah, they've sort of, it's come through via osmosis into their brains or something.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think vinyl obviously has had a bit of a resurge as well in the last few years. We have used vinyl at Bristol when we've had the large rooms downstairs, but we find because we're the room that we use quite
every year, that works really well with CD. And my father was so anti-streaming, which is very difficult. He was so traditional in what he liked, because he felt like CD was the best recording. And although there's some very good platforms for streaming around now,
yes,
he was old school, and that's what he liked, and that's how he felt it presented the speakers the best. So it is trying to push that forward and reach a newer audience is very difficult. But I think slowly they are coming into that aspect, you know, of taking on what their parents maybe have been interested in, whether that's by default or not, who knows. But I think traditional hi-fi will still have its place. It might become more of a niche market, but I think it will still have its place in the hi-fi world going forward.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, certainly at the shows I've been to recently, whether internationally or locally here, there seems to be quite a lot of younger people. And
yeah.
And some people might say, oh yeah, what's young, old man? But I mean I mean from probably even teenagers. Sometimes they're there with their parents, like you say. But
exactly.
But in the 20s and 30s, there's teams of them. There's a lot of and it's less young white guys, if I can use that expression. There's a lot of people living in Australia of different backgrounds, and it's quite often not the Anglo-Saxons, interestingly, considering how strong, you know, that UK background, you know, how deeply embedded the UK is in hi-fi, always has been. It's quite often all sorts of other people, you know, with backgrounds from various parts of Southeast Asia and India and China, absolutely. And so there's a lot of love for their music, whatever that is, and they seem to appreciate a great system. And sometimes, you know, they'll flip open their phone and show you a picture of their system, and it's some enormous stack of expensive equipment, easily $50,000 or $100,000, and you're like, wow, I don't even know where you get the money from. I certainly I'm in the trade and I don't have that at home. So it's there's a lot of love for affordable gear. So I think the industry, to use that terrible expression, but I think it has quite a buoyant future. I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But you certainly want to spread the word to a fresh audience, because, as you say, the traditional PROAC purchaser, coupled with the fact that PROACs don't break down and last forever, as a general rule, means that, there's not probably a lot of business to be had in that sector, I guess. There's one thing I want to ask you about, related a little bit to those older clients and their equipment from years ago, is that I have a suspicion you keep quite a broad range of or good back catalogue of spare parts to keep the older models going. Is that the case, and is that becoming difficult to do?
Yes and yes. So
yes. Okay.
My father was always wanting to help people. So if they had a model that was, I mean, I still have people contact me about old Selef models.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
EBSs, or even early Proact models, EBSs and Super Towers.
Okay.
If we can still get the parts, we will do it. But it's becoming increasingly difficult because some parts just aren't in production anymore, or suppliers aren't in business anymore.
Yeah,
it really depends on what we can do. If we can help, we will. But obviously, we have our have our limits to what we can go to. If we can't get it ourselves, then it's very difficult to be able to then support the customer. But we do try where we can, and we do have a lot of spare parts. My father, again, he was a bit of a hoarder as well, so he never threw anything out. So if it could be used again and it could help someone, then it was kept.
Yeah, so, okay. So you've got
difficult to manage. More streamlined.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's becoming a bit more streamlined in what we can get, but we are trying to maintain parts where we can. So if we can help, we will.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, I know you use, I don't know if you use any off-the-shelf drive units, but I know that you historically, some well-known European makers have helped you with drive unit manufacture. But I also get the impression that you certainly are using your own recipes. I don't know how much do you build any drive units in your facility, or do you have them all made for you to your requirements? So how does that kind of work?
It's a bit of a mix. So we do put some stuff together here. We do have some manufacturers build stuff to our specifications. We do have quite often we have chassis and baskets made specifically how we want them made, and then manufacturers will assemble units into our baskets for us. So it's a bit of a variety, really. Okay. We try and look at all possibilities for drive units and trying different materials, particularly for cones. Mm-hmm. So it isn't one rule fits every model. So it really depends on which model and how much of that model we put together. Everything is manufactured at our factory in Brackley from the point of view that everything is assembled here.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
We source all our own metalwork, so it is quite challenging at times with suppliers and getting stuff in that we need. But we have suppliers that we've worked with for years and years, so we have a good working relationship with a lot of those suppliers as well. So, yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag from that point of view. But yeah, we try and look at what's new, what we can use, how we can put stuff together. Can we do it ourselves? Can we, you know, do it alongside a specific manufacturer? So we try and work it the best we can.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. Well, the K series, of course, K is for Kevlar. I understand.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's kind of. It's funny because sometimes you can think that Kevlar might sound a particular way based on, I don't know, maybe other UK manufacturer speakers that use Kevlar diaphragms. And then you hear your K-series and you're like, yeah, it doesn't sound like that. So just for those that are listening and thinking Kevlar might lend a certain, I mean, obviously it must lend, I mean, obviously the breakup modes or something, there's something, the cone structure, I mean, I guess most Kevlar cones maybe react similarly, but the way they are managed in the crossover or maybe in the thickness of
Definitely.
The diaphragm or something, you seem to have solved some problems there and obviously obtained some advantage from that modern material, relatively modern material.
But it's
not got any of that. I think everyone knows what we're talking about. It doesn't sound like what you think it might. But of course, the base, I guess, is that the main advantage? It's the base is a little more articulate. Is that, or is that?
I think so.
More and a question John should answer. I don't know.
well, I'll answer the best I can from my technical abilities. But from a sales point of view of a Kevlar driver over, paper or something else, it has, I think, because of the structure of the material, it's very good for the bass frequencies. Mm-hmm. It also is very good for the mid-range, providing you get the crossover right. So I think, again, it comes back to the crossover design and where you're crossing that point over to cover the different frequencies. So I think the cone is very good. It has very good capabilities. It's just using it in the right way with the combination of the other drive units and working out where you're going to bring one in and cut one off on the crossover. So
indeed,
I think that's where maybe we've been more successful with the Kevlar, because we pay lots and lots of attention to the crossover. So I think, again, it's probably down to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess you're using that, nearly 50 years worth of heritage to, thoroughly understand.
We haven't used Kevlar for 50
years.
Well,
no, but 50 years worth of crossover design to...
Yeah,
I'm guessing Kevlar is quite a new addition to your lineup, relatively.
Yeah, so Stuart was always interested in trying new materials. Before Kevlar, we used carbon fibre in the products we made before the K series. Yes. We were using carbon fibre in the cones. And I think... someone recommended Kevlar, so we tried Kevlar, and that's where he first developed the K6, which was the first model we made with Kevlar, and the K8. And then we've obviously then pushed that forwards now onto the range of K speakers, starting with the K1 and up to the K10. And it's the first time we've had a really good high-end range as well, rather than just one or two models in a higher range. So the customer...
has the opportunity to progress, whereas before we only maybe had two high-end speakers. Well, yeah. Now we've got a high-end range, which I think has also helped. We've just had a really good review for the K3 as well in What Hi-Fi, a five-star review. So it's definitely the best high-end range we've had, I would say, ever.
Yeah, so. Well, in fact, speaking of range, you have a hell of a range. There is a lot. Well, I find it slightly terrifying.
A lot of models.
There is a lot of models. Now, at one point, and one point I asked you about this, you won't remember, at a show or something, but was that, and I had you, yourself or John confirm that you, in fact, at least at that point, we're doing quite a lot of models with either the Ribbon or a good old dome tweeter.
Yeah.
Is that something, breezing through your website, as I've done in recent times, I feel as if there isn't that offering so much anymore. Are you still doing that, or did you?
No, absolutely. Yep.
So, don't say that. There's too many models, and then you double the amount. So tell me about that, because that's such a... It's such a sort of, well, kind of taking a bet each way. I mean, is it designed to satisfy maybe some clients who just have it in for one type of tweeter or the other? Or does Johnny yourself, or perhaps back in the day, your father, really feel that there was a solid reason, a good reason to use, you know, to offer both versions? I mean, it seems like a lot of work.
Well, yeah, obviously dome was always the traditional, going back years, dome tweeters were the mainstay. And then my father found some good ribbon tweeter designs that he wanted to use and incorporate into the speakers, and it started with the higher end models. We just had clients requesting, can you make this model with a ribbon tweeter?
Oh, is that
and
right?
It start,
so you'd, yeah, get, you'd so, get requests. Okay.
Yeah, we'd get requests. I'd like this model, but I really want it with a ribbon tweeter. For instance, the D20, I think, was one of the first models that we offered either with a dome or a ribbon tweeter. And I think it comes down to the dispersion of the tweeter. The two tweeters have different dispersions, which brings different qualities for the listener. I think with any hi-fi, you have to really get the positioning of the speakers right so that you're hitting that sweet spot. Particularly with the ribbon tweeter, you want it around ear height when you're seated. We always recommend speakers are slightly toe in. So other than setup, people do still want either a dome or ribbon, and we offer that right from a D20 to a D30 and a D48, right up, and the D2, which was the most recent addition to come along with a dome or ribbon. D2 was one of our iconic models, which has been around a very long time, has very good reviews. It's one of our best-selling speakers. We had customers saying, could you do this with a ribbon? And that's why we decided to design that with a ribbon tweeter. And they do, if you have the two side by side, you will hear there is a difference. It is quite I think with the ribbon tweeter you're going to get a little bit more detail. Some people find ribbon tweeters a little bit harsh because of the detail that it brings. I don't think it's so much of a harshness, it's just because it goes more in depth into those higher frequencies in the detail part of it. So again, anyone that was coming on to us and ask, I quite often get asked, well, I want this model, but I don't know whether to have it with a dome or a ribbon.
Yeah, so what do you
say? We normally recommend everyone, regardless of what they're to, we say you must go and audition. So you need to go and listen to the speakers, because what one person will like necessarily won't be what another person will like. So it's really down to how you perceive the speakers and the type of music you're listening to. We find a lot of customers that are very heavily into classical music really like the ribbon tweeter because of the detail that that brings. The dome tweeter is still very good in its detail. It's more of a warmer combination, I would say, with the dome rather than a ribbon. The ribbon, I don't find the ribbon harsh. Some people have said, oh, I prefer the dome. Again, it's down to preferential taste. So it's really down to the customers, to what they prefer. So we always say, go and listen to both so you can decide for yourself, because I can't tell you which one you'll like, because your ears are your ears and you will listen and you will decide for yourself.
And I guess there's maybe the performance of one over the other lends itself slightly more towards certain styles of music or something as well. Well, we'll be back with Zoe in a second. We're going to take a very quick break and we will be right back. Thanks, Zoe. Back in a sec.
Thank you.
Brisbane Hi-Fi. I mean, the clue is kind of in the title. The store is located in Brisbane and they sell hi-fi. But it's not just another hi-fi store. It's kind of like some kind of tropical weekend away in paradise. The people are friendly, there's lots of interesting things to see and listen to in this case, and the drinks are tasty. I highly recommend Brisbane Hi-Fi for a different hi-fi purchasing experience. brisbanehifi.com.au. We're back with Zoe from Proac, a famous UK loudspeaker manufacturer. And when I say famous, I mean, you know, there's only really a handful of genuine UK manufactured speakers left. Well, maybe two handfuls. You've been around for as long as any other, I think, if not more. I was going to say, who else is left? I mean, we don't really want to mention those other manufacturers, but do you feel like you're in a small club what's the word, you know? What is the right word?
Affiliated brands.
Well, I mean, in the sense that you... Is there a camaraderie between yourself and some of those other brands that we all know that still bang
definitely.
Away making things at home?
Yeah, you know, when we go and do, for instance, the Bristol show, we don't get to see these guys all year round because obviously they're busy with what they're doing as well.
Yes.
But when we go to somewhere like Munich or the Bristol show, you know, we see other manufacturers. We've known all the other manufacturers for many years, and my father had really good relationships as well with lots of the other speaker designers. He was very friendly with Julian from Naim back in the day, and so he'd been in the business a long time, so he had lots of people that he was friends with, and we still speak to everybody at the show. You know, we've always had a really good relationship with Michelle Engineering. You know, we now partner a lot with Exposure Electronics when we do shows, and we have a very good relationship with Sugden's as well. So, you know, and other speaker brands. So it is like when you get to the show, it's like, oh, hi, we only see each other all sort of socially once or twice a year.
Yes.
But, you know, there is a good friendship. You know, it's good to see everybody and catch up and say hi. So yeah, definitely, it's like a big club really that everybody goes to a couple of times a year and catches up. But
it is a bit like that, and it's super, you know, it's great fun, of course, and it's probably the opposite of what a lot of maybe some clients, consumers, what have you, think that goes on, where you're sort of, you know, banging each other.
Backstabbing each other and trying to
steal secrets.
No.
When in the reality is you're probably sharing suppliers to some degree and everyone's in the same boat. And
definitely. Absolutely.
It's great to know. And, I guess I knew that was the case, but I did want to make sure that it was still the case.
Yes.
Yeah, as an extension of the whole UK manufacturing situation, what do you, I mean, I won't lead you on this. What do you feel, having that ability to screw the product together, you know, in a matter of meters away from where it's designed and measured and tested and doing everything in the one building, what do you feel, I mean, that you think that gives to the client, the person who buys the loudspeaker? There's obviously some tangible benefits to not subcontracting out the the actual manufacturing. Because let's face it, to call yourself a manufacturer and yet all you do is send designs to China, I feel like that's not really manufacturing in a way, particularly if they pack it up there and ship it directly from there as well, like drop ship it around the planet. I'll let you answer the question, Zoe. What do you feel some of the benefits of making things at home are?
I think it's absolutely crucial so that you've got control over your design, and making sure your QC is right. If you're subcontracting everything out to everybody else and you're not even seeing the finished product, how do you have any control over the quality control for a start? Everything that we make is made from, we don't have built product on the shelf ready to ship out. Every order is made to hand.
Yes.
Once it's received, we have one lady that makes all the crossovers by hand. None of it's made on any sort of machinery. It's all made by hand.
Yes.
And then it's all assembled here at the factory. It's every speaker is tested sonically and measured before it goes out. Everything is packed here. Everything ships from here. So,
That's an interesting thing. Oh, well, no, but I love the fact that so every single finished product is listened to and measured.
Yes.
Now, in my little tiny enterprise, I do the same thing, but you're still doing that at some kind of scale, and I don't need to know how many pairs of loudspeakers you're making a week, but it's obviously it's more than one pair. So, I mean, that's kind of impressive, and obviously you feel very strongly about that, and the fact that every time you send something out, you know it's going to work at the other end and work both most as definitely. A pair and work the same as the last pair of that particular model that you made as well.
Yep, absolutely. So we have measuring equipment on the benches where the speakers are built. So one person will build a pair of speakers. So it won't be a case of one person will put drive units in and then it will be passed to somebody else for packing, or it will be passed on to somebody else for measuring. One person builds that pair of speakers from scratch right through until they pack them in the box. So that, you know, it's continuity through the whole build of the speaker.
Yeah.
So that one person knows all the QC that needs to be met to make sure that that speaker is going to reach the customer in its prime condition. So yeah, that's very important to us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I expected and glad to hear it. And it is. I mean, the reality is, of course, it is a more expensive proposition to make things in America, in Australia, in Germany, in England. It's unavoidable. You know, people get paid a good wage. It's a more expensive country to live in, etc. There's no way around it. It's going to cost more to make. But there is a benefit there, and that is that you are receiving a premium product that's very carefully screwed together. I like to feel... Or I feel as if that it's the whole, I don't want to call it a cottage industry because I have no idea how many people work there or whatever. I guess there's a dozen or more or less or thereabouts. Or maybe 50 people work there. You don't need to tell me, but no, not 50.
I am quite too expensive. To tell. No, I think that's what makes us quite versatile because we are a small family business of probably around 8 employees.
Yes.
So it is very small. Everybody that works here has worked here a long time. Everybody knows exactly what we need to do to produce the product to its prime. So I think that's why it works so well, because we all understand totally our role and what it is that we are trying to bring to the customer. So I think that obviously plays a big part for us. Yes, you can have lots and lots of employees. You know, there's lots of speaker brands that are far bigger than we are. And you know, what works for them is good and what works for us is good. So it really depends on the individual manufacturer, I think, and how they choose to get their parts and manufacture their speakers. But for us, it definitely works with us doing everything in the one place.
Yeah, I feel the family business, the small volumes, carefully assembled. There's a sincerity, if you like, to the way you're doing it, in the sense that you love music, you love the way your loudspeakers sound, you want to make them properly, and that's what you're doing. I mean, it's real. It's like it's something that you can It's tangible and you can grab onto it. And it's also a product, of course, made from fine quality materials that will last, I'm going to say, as someone who knows how long these things last, they're going to last for 30 years, probably untouched, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
And yep. So, or longer. And so, yeah, it's a very real high quality thing. There's, I mean, your marketing these days is quite good, but I mean, let's face it, you're not really, you're a loudspeaker designer and manufacturer first, not a marketing company first. And
exactly,
you know, that's you need to tell people about it. But some companies seem to have, well, it's modern manufacturing in a way. I mean, this is where I come back to my little theme of being product being a little unfashionable in a way, is that, you know, is that you are seemingly more about producing beautiful products than anything else. You're not a faceless, soulless corporation trying to generate profits for shareholders, clearly, although you kind of are. You're obviously a
most
shareholder.
Definitely not.
But not thousands of shareholders. And, yeah, I mean, it's a different – and I'd like people to understand that. I think, yeah, most people do, but I guess some people don't realise that how things are made, and that most consumer items these days are really just – ways for manufacturers to make money. There's not a lot of feel or feels or, you know, what's the vibe, man, that goes into it. You know, whereas clearly Proac and other small manufacturers of quality products, you know, I mean, that they're doing it differently. You know, it's there's a reality to it. I like it.
Like I said, it's kind of each to their own. You know, it depends as a company and as a manufacturer what's most important to you. And I've been left with this huge legacy, obviously, and like I said before, huge shoes to fill. And I would like to honour the fact that my father was so respected, and we've built a good brand over the years. And it would be silly for me not to want to continue doing that. So I know his ethos. I know what it was he wanted to achieve. So my aim is to do that and just carry on producing really great speakers that bring people joy, which is what he loved doing.
Well, it seems like you're doing exactly that.
Thank you.
From everything, from speaking to you briefly in person and seeing the website, hearing the product, I know you're selling the brand is sold, I'm going to guess, in say 30 or 40 countries across the planet. I don't know how many exactly,
yeah,
but it's something like that, right? I'm sure you know exactly how many it is. I'll wrap things up with a couple of little bits of housekeeping that people are probably aware of, but I think it's on your website anyhow, sort of the history of the brand. But
yes,
I like the way, you know, your father seemed to like to keep things simple. So Celef, which was the original speakers that he was making, which I have to say, I nearly bought a pair in about 1982. They were secondhand in a shop in this country, in this town, actually.
Right.
And I really wanted to buy them. And I feel like a bit of a heel for not, because they were about $300 secondhand. Which, of course, as an apprentice electronics technician, was about four times my weekly wage. And I bought something else that was about $100 cheaper. But I really like the look of those. And at the time, I was thinking Chartwell, Rogers, that was kind of the look. Maybe it was the plastic cone. I don't know. But anyhow, a friend of the show, co-host, guest wrangler, another loudspeaker designer, Brad Serhan, also have a strong love for Celef as well, because he's told me. But, yeah, that brand was apparently created from simply a shortening of the two drive unit brands that we used to make them, Celestian and Kef.
Yes, that's right.
Which is, you know, I mean, why go to any, you know, unnecessary effort? It's all about the sound, right? But then Proac, which I never really knew where that came from. And, of course, you hear people say it differently, and I'm hoping that Proac is how you pronounce it, like, because a lot of people turn it into Proace or Proac.
Yeah.
Proac?
Yeah.
But it is.
It is Proac, yes.
Yes.
Proac loudspeakers.
Thank God I got it right.
Proac actually comes from professional acoustics.
Find the sound of your life by crafting a quality stereo system with the Hi-Fi Shop. featuring all the brands you know and love. Riga turntables, Bowers and Wilkins loudspeakers, Exposure Electronics, amplifiers and CD players from the UK, and of course Sonos Faba loudspeakers from Italy. The Hi-Fi Shop helps you create your sound. Visit the team at hifishop.com.au. Yeah, it's as simple as that, isn't it? Why not? It is more imaginative than doing the other thing that was done back in the day. No doubt friends of your father's and probably yourself, you know, the things like Spendor and, you know, Spencer and Dorothy.
Yep.
And
Harbour. Harry and Beth.
Yes. And there's a couple of other examples of that, I think, if I put my mind to it. So
I have to just say though, my dad was quite sticky in that some of the models were named after family members in the early days because we made a Celef LLC one, but my nan was called Elsie, so I think he named it a Celef LC one after my nan.
Okay.
So that was my mum's mum, not my dad's mum, that yes. also worked at the business. But yeah, so he did have a sneaky way of putting names in without you really realising it.
He did that with Proac, really, because I must admit I've scratched my heads over I don't have two heads. I've scratched my head over that on and off over the years, thinking, I wonder where that really comes from. And more about because I feel like I've corrected people a few times saying, I think it really is just Proac, not Proarc, which used to kind of annoy me. Just from the point of view, there's no R in there, really. But but anyhow, at least in the English language, it should be Proac. But look, that was probably most of the housekeeping. I guess the fact that it's such a strong, you know, historically a family business. I mean, the fact that your father dragged in his father and mother to assist. When I say yep. dragged in, I have no idea whether he dragged them in or they happily changed course in their own careers and started working for their yep. son, which is such a you know, it's an ode to his skills. Really, they've gone, wow, well, you know, this kid of ours yep. is, you know, really going somewhere. And then you carrying on the baton. And then I had no idea that John had known your father for yep. so long. I knew they'd worked together for some time, but I didn't realise it was that bloody long. So really, you've yep. answered a lot of questions I think that people probably had or wondered about. And so, like I've summed up earlier, you know, well, you know, it is what it is. And then, as you say, a fourth generation also showing an interest in working in the factory as well. So yep. it's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much, Zoe, for your time and making the time.
It's been a pleasure.
And like I say, you've answered Absolutely. A lot of questions. And maybe I won't be at Bristol. You're going to be displaying at Bristol in a this episode comes out. Well, I'm trying to think when this episode comes out. It probably comes out while Bristol is on, damn it. But we'll put a news flash on the website or on our social media to let people yep. know that you're there.
Because
You are there.
We'll be in our usual room. Yeah, usual room 216 with a new model. So,
crikey.
If you're intrigued and you want to see, follow us on social media because over the next few weeks we'll be releasing more details about what we'll be taking to Bristol. So,
okay.
That's all I can tell you at the moment. But
you can't say whether it's big, small, high, short, wide.
I can't tell you. You'll have to wait and see. Okay. Follow us on social media.
Well, we will of course do exactly that for each other and allow people to more people to find out that you've got that new model coming now. And then just to finish off on before we say goodbye, Vienna, will you be there or what is the status of this new show? Do you think?
I'm hoping we will be there. We are looking at doing a collaboration, but again, that is all I can tell you at the moment because it's still in the early days of us sorting it out. So, yes, we very much hope to be in Vienna, either with a speaker or we will be attending.
Be there to have a look either way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Zoe. Thanks so much for your time. Everyone appreciates it and I might see you at Vienna.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you soon.
And a big thank you to StereoNet and Soundstage Australia for their continuing support of this podcast. fellow media creators, but I guess in different sectors, because StereoNet has probably one of the most popular audio-related forums in the world, and the classifieds are amazing. All sorts of gear comes up for sale, and of course reviews, news articles, etc., which is well worth a look. Soundstage Australia, Edgar Kramer writes a magnificent, highly detailed and careful review, great photography, interesting products, and over at soundstageaustralia.com you can see those. So StereoNet.com, SoundstageAustralia.com. Have a look now.